one of the most requested topics people tell me to talk about all the time is female friendships. Why are they so complicated? Why are they so hard? Be back in just a minute to talk about it.
This is Nero Feliciano, and welcome to the All Things Life podcast. I'm a wife, a mom of four, and a cognitive psychotherapist. And I'm really excited to share these conversations and interviews with you that will hopefully help you live a healthier, fuller, and more peaceful life.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Today is Wednesday. If you're listening to this episode the day it drops, that's our wellness day on the podcast. And I just want to welcome you all back. I have to tell you, I've been looking at the analytics for this podcast and so thrilled to see listeners all over the country, all over the world. And I just have to shout out a couple areas because we're seeing more and more listeners from this area. Iowa. I don't know anybody in Iowa, but I am so thrilled to know that I have listeners there and I want to connect with all of you. So send me an email at nero@nerofeliciano.com. I want to know how you heard about this, but I'm so thrilled to have people in Iowa, Kentucky. These are some of the areas that surprised me just living out here in our little state of Connecticut. I have one listener in France, and I need to know who you are because you listen to this podcast as soon as it comes out every week, every episode, and I'm so grateful for you that you do that, and please share it with your friends. And when this whole quarantine COVID thing is over, I am coming to meet you, friend. In fact, I'm going to travel all over to meet listeners everywhere, and I'll have news about that hopefully very soon. But anyway, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for listening all over the place and for sharing these episodes. And I hope that they really bring you some hope and encouragement during this time where we're all struggling. So today we are revisiting the topic of girlfriends. And really, this is about friendships, whether or not you're female or not. If you love a female in your life and you want to know why is there drama when it comes to these relationships, listen to this. If you're raising daughters, listen to this, because all of this stuff starts really young and it continues on into adulthood, menopause and beyond. Let me assure you of that. But there is hope. And today I'm talking with my dear friend and colleague, therapist Carrie Amos, who's such a wealth of information and wisdom. And we did an episode on this a while back. So if you didn't see that, definitely catch it, because there's a lot we talk about on that as well. But this one is just about, can we be friends? Can we still be friends? Because all of us have gone through so many things during this pandemic, whether it's a pandemic or the election, that have brought to the surface the truth of who we are, what we believe, what we are comfortable talking about and doing during this time. And in that may have created some pretty significant divisions with people who we considered or maybe still consider very good friends. So we're talking about some of those issues on this podcast. This actually originally was a live on Instagram that Carrie and I taped. So if you actually want to see the video, it's on my Instagram page at Nero Feliciano. And you can actually hear a little bit more than is probably on this recording. But we talk about many things. How do you make friends later in life? How do you be friends with women in your family, whether they're sister-in-law, you know, sisters, other family members, which sometimes can be trickier, and a bunch of other questions that you actually sent us to talk about. So I'm really excited to share this conversation with you because I think many of us will resonate with the content, especially right now in this season. This is my conversation with my friend and therapist, Carrie Amos. So let's just start female friendships. I mean, everybody's kind of navigating them differently in this season. They've been tough. They've been tough. I mean, we have differences in how we see COVID and how we're navigating this time with our families, with the election, and then just the general complicated nature of female friendships. Why is it so complicated?
Well, all the reasons, all the things you just said, but I think, like, especially women are complicated. We tend to be the species that overthinks things. But also COVID and being socially distant and isolated, it has made connection so much harder. I just don't think human connection was meant to be over a cell phone or over the computer. And that's what we've had to do for the better part of 9 months. And that connection is lacking because we're not able to be up close and personal with our friends.
It's made it really hard, I think. And even, you know, when you make the effort to get together in person outside, I mean, some people are comfortable at this point. We're seeing just living their life like we did before, but it does make a difference to see each other in person. So I think, yeah, the connection piece is definitely hard. But then now we've experienced so many different situations that have been really divisive. And it's like, how do we get past this to be friends? So let's just jump in, because the question I got for a lot of people was, do we let politics affect our friendship? And this is a tough one. This is a tough one.
Just right out of the gate. Right out of the gate, you got to start right there.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take that one. So tell me your perspective.
I think it's an individual choice. I think it was definitely you speaking, and I can't remember if it was an IG Live or one of your podcasts, where you were talking about the lens with which we look through and what is a deal breaker. And
yep, for some podcast.
Yeah,
hello, Lisa goes, dive right in.
Lisa's my lobster, and if anyone knows what that means, you can share that in the comments and maybe get a little something special from me. But
everybody, feel free to comment on your thoughts on this too. We'll read them.
Please. So what lens do you look through, and how do you identify yourself? So if politics and your political affiliation is a deal breaker, well, then you have to know that, you have to own that, and you have to be willing to have conversations with your friends. If religion or faith is a deal breaker, and if you don't share my perspective on faith, that's not a deal breaker for me. So I think it's an individual choice. I think where we get complicated is politics is one thing, the ugliness of this current season and
political is another
thing. And I think we need to separate those two things.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Mary just said, avoid political conversations these days, but live an active life in my own beliefs, live your own truth. Yeah. And I think, like you said, it depends on the issues. It depends on what become deal breakers, you know, and one of the points that I made on the podcast that's coming out tomorrow is there's certain issues that are more about, okay, this is about me and my family now, and how you see us and how you are with us in person versus the stance you take in private. And there's a piece that doesn't align in my mind. So that becomes an issue that impacts our friendship, right? So I think, like you said, it really depends. But the one thing I've been talking to people about is, okay, so when we have these topics that come up in politics, and they are, I mean, they're presented now, when I say presented, because we're getting different perspectives all the time, to elicit an emotional reaction, right? A deep, strong emotional reaction. And that's not the place in which to act from, to respond from. And oftentimes we lose the whole context of the relationship, because we're focused on that one piece. And I think, yeah, some conversations are not worth our emotional effort. I did learn that during this season. I think we have to think about the history of our relationship with this person. What are the times where we've connected? Have they been genuine? Have we known that this person has had our back before? And in what ways, you know? And then maybe there's a 180 right now. Maybe there is, but maybe there's more to consider before we make the decision to no longer be friends with this person anymore. What are your Absolutely. Thoughts?
No, I agree with that. And I think if we look at other circumstances and take out the heat of this current climate and the fire and the anger and the ugliness, often I give clients advice whether it's a teenager or an adult, when you are in conflict with someone, take a break. Take a break, take a deep breath. Think through it, feel your feelings, but then let's choose our behavior, because we're responsible for our behavior. And I think if we take that advice into this current climate, it would do us all good. It would do us all good to, before we are quick to lash out and say, you dirty dog on Facebook, because someone posted something that we completely disagree with, just take a break, take a deep breath. Feel the feelings, because we're human and we have feelings, right? But then choose our behavior. Is that lashing out comment going to serve us good? Are we being a good role model, a good example for our children, our friends, or, you know, those are all the things that that go through my head when I see comments that turn my stomach or hurt me. And to the point of, well, you know what, maybe I need to take a social media break. But but take a break, take a minute just to think through, what's the thought? How do I want to respond?
Mm-hmm. It says respond, Mary said. Yep. Perfect. Respond, not react. That's exactly it. Just switching gears, because, you know, we could spend the whole time on that question. With female friendships, okay, what was I going to ask you? I do this all the time. You give me a question, it'll come back. You know I do this all the time because my mind is going so fast.
Yeah.
Give me one of yours.
Sure. So somebody asked me, when do you know that it's time, that it's okay to be vulnerable in a friendship?
Mm-hmm. When it's safe to be vulnerable, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that can vary in time, right? You have to feel like you can trust this person. How have they demonstrated that they are trustworthy in your life? I think you have to watch how they are with other people. Is this someone who talks about everybody else to you? Because even though they're forming an alliance with you, that behavior can easily be turned around at some point and you could be the center of it. So I think we have to be cautious in sharing those things that are vulnerable. And at the same time, sometimes we don't open up vulnerability in that other person until we take that risk and share our own selves vulnerably. So sometimes that is the catalyst to getting to that place of vulnerability mutually in a relationship. But I think take a little bit of time before you jump into that space. What are your thoughts?
I agree. And I usually wait a little bit longer than probably most to be vulnerable. And that's probably rooted in being hurt, you know, from friends in the past. But I think authenticity requires vulnerability. So just like in a relationship, you know, I remember when I was dating my husband, you know when it's safe, you know when you're ready to take that leap and say, I'm going to give it my all and I'm going to open up and tell him everything. And so the same thing, I think, with female friends.
I think too, exactly. I think, you know, you can kind of trust your own knowing in that. Melly just says, I've had that situation recently and I've actually chosen to be less vulnerable with someone, which is also a wise decision. You know, you have to trust yourself and what you feel like. I love that. I think you have to trust yourself in that too. And sense it, you know, and sense it in yourself if you feel like it isn't safe to be vulnerable. I know for me, there's certain things I hold real tight because there's certain things that I don't share with people. I want the people who I share it with, I know whatever they bring to me, whatever their response is, whether it's positive or negative, I know it's coming from a good place. And I know that they have my back. And when I talk about my circle of vulnerability, it's small, like tiny, you know? So, and I think at the end of the day, there are some things that there are only very few people that we can be vulnerable with.
Agreed. I call it my safe and sacred space. And if you're going to get into that safe and sacred space, you've earned the right to be heard, and I've earned the right to be heard with you. So I think, again, it's an individual decision.
By the way, am I like in that safe and sacred space in
your
life?
You are. You're right up in there, Nero. You are.
You have to say that right now. Okay, I remembered what I was going to say. It comes back to me, you know. It's freaking over 40. So you and I know that we have the same conversations with 12-year-olds in the office as we do 46-year-olds, 50-year-olds. The feeling of being excluded, the feeling of being overlooked. And we have these conversations with 12-year-olds, how to deal with it. What do you say to women who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are dealing with the same issues with their friends? Like, why didn't they know better? You know, why didn't they know better? Why was I excluded? Why are these conversations going on about me when I thought we were friends?
And you're absolutely right. I have the exact same conversation with tweens, teens, and adults. And I had sessions with all three of those age ranges today. And sometimes it starts with the narrative we create in our own heads. So sometimes it's not that we've been excluded. It's not that they're talking about us. It's not that they don't want to be our friend, but it's our own insecurity, which perhaps comes from hurts or habits in the past, that creates this whole thesis in our head that she didn't invite me. She doesn't want to be my friend. I must not be worthy. What am I doing wrong? I have to change to be her friend. And it's, wait a minute, did she say that to you? No. What happened that truth bomb? What happened that, well, nothing. I just, you know, I saw the way she looked at me, or I feel like I know what she's thinking. Well, you don't. You don't.
That story that we tell ourselves about it that makes sense to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if we don't stop those thoughts, we can create a whole novel in our minds about this other person and how they don't want to be our friends and they're plotting against us. And perhaps none of that's true. So the work always starts inside. How do we value ourselves? Do we believe we're worthy of being a good friend and having a good friend? And once we can do that work on ourselves, then that's what we're presenting out to everyone else. I am worthy. I am a good friend. I have the characteristics and the makings of a good friend. And then we can walk in with purpose and with confidence. But it always starts with our own thoughts and our own self-analysis of I'm not good enough or I'm not worthy enough.
And examining that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, so today, actually, I was listening to a podcast with Lori Gottlieb, who's the author of Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, which is such a fantastic book, especially if you're a therapist, to read it. And she talks about how we are poor narratives of our own story often. And what good therapy is the process of discussing the narrative and editing the narrative so we can get unstuck. Because the reason it is our story, it is our narrative, but it's not always accurate. And it's those areas that it's not that keep us stuck. So that story needs editing. So I guess in those cases, when I've had clients in that situation, I always encourage them, yes, to do what you just said. Absolutely. Examine where you're coming from. How much of this do we really know it's true? Is this a story we're telling ourselves? But also, go back to those people who you consider friends and have conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what I saw. This is what I was feeling. You know, did something happen between us that I'm not aware of? Let's get to that. How do you have that kind of conversation with a six-year-old? My daughter already has those left out feelings so young. It starts so young. It mm-hmm. starts incredibly young. And let's get to that in a second. But sometimes these narratives are accurate. Sometimes there are women our age not including, leaving out, talking about. So what do you say to those women who are finding that their friends may not really be their friends?
Mm-hmm. Well, I am a big fan of Brené Brown and her work on shame and her work on vulnerability and confidence. And when you said that, Neuro, it immediately made me think of some of the words of Brené, which is that friend acting in a way that causes me to feel less than? Is that the friend that has sympathy for me, not empathy with me? Is that the friend that I always feel like I have to, that always I sense is like one-upping me? If I say I got an 80, she got a 100. Is that the friend? And if you answer yes to all of those questions, it's time to ask yourself, is that a friend? What is it that it's attracting me to that person when I leave their space and their presence and I feel worse about myself? And if it's someone that you say, yeah, I really, that's a friend that's worth fighting for. If that's the case, then we need to work on how to have the conversation. And it starts with I statements. So you don't make me feel any sort of way. I choose how I feel. But when you leave me out, I feel rejected. When you forget to call me because I still, you know, I'm the only one in the group with kids, I feel isolated. I feel like, so it's really owning your feelings, but being able to sit down with that person and say, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's triggering me to feel that way. Can we talk about it? And I think in that setting, you'll know pretty quickly if that's a friend or not.
Yeah. And then to give yourself permission, I think Melly talked about giving permission to have your sacred space, your sacred circle, give yourself permission to leave that friendship if you need to, and trust that you have enough goodness in you that you will find your people and invest more time in those people, because those other friendships that actually may be your more genuine friendships that evolve into something really incredibly meaningful, you just not have been able to spend the time with those people yet because your time has been here discovering what this is about. So invest your time elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Do you want to take that question about how do you explain this to kids, to a 6-year-old? Well, I know my kindergartner went through this.
I was going to say you should take it because you have a 6-year-old. So maybe. Oh.
So this happened, and you know, feeling left out, and you could also already see the social hierarchies that form in kindergarten. I was amazed when I went and saw it last year. And this is my fourth child, so somehow I missed this for the last three. But I said to her, you know, we have to look at the people around you who are kind, who want to be with you because you're really special and you're a good friend. And we talked about the ways that she is a good friend. And we talked about the friends who do love her and want to be with her, and family members, because sometimes they're kids who, outside of their family, they haven't found that yet. Just to validate the child in that setting and to really help them identify, this is what a good friend looks like. And you want to ask them those questions because you want them to go through that process of exploration as well, not just giving them the answers. So they can begin to identify that in their surroundings. And that's a very similar conversation, even with middle schoolers. So I've always talked to my kids as they were real people, not kids. So the same conversations that I am having with adults, yes, we kind of put it in their own words, but we want them to understand that process young, because that's a process they're going to have to hold on to for the rest of their lives. Yes. As women.
Yes, I agree.
I have other questions. How many times do you reach out before you pull back when someone doesn't respond?
That's an excellent question, because I think it, for me, it also lends itself to that narrative that I was talking about before. So we can reach out 2 or 3 times. And in this season, at least for me, I'm still pretty much isolated at home. And so it's text or it's email. I mean, I don't really, I think you, Nero, might be my only friend that we actually pick up the phone and talk. But
there's too much to text. I can't write it off.
All the words. But if someone doesn't, you know, I'm usually the recipient. I think that's the right order. So I'm usually the one that friends will say, you haven't texted me back. What's going on? And I am the one that is not glued to my phone 24 hours a day. I try real hard not to text or use my phone for personal reasons while I'm working. And that's not the case for everybody. So if 2 or 3 hours goes by or 2 or 3 days go by, there's often a what's happening. I also have several friends whose children are grown and out of the house. And sometimes I need to remind them, I still have littles in the house, and they still, you know, it would be a crime if I didn't care for them. So I still have the, you know, responsibilities. So I think the how long do you wait before you pull back? I think that's individual, but I wouldn't just pull back, because that's almost
right away
aggressive. I almost think you would want to have a conversation and say, hey, I've reached out a couple of times. Is everything okay? Mm-hmm. And then if the person doesn't respond, well, then it might just be time to let it be. But don't create a narrative that you're letting it be because someone's being mean and they're not responding to you and they're a jerk and all the things. Just let it be.
I think that's such good advice. And also to look into what is preventing them from responding? Like you said, for some, they have little kids, but what if it's something else? Mm-hmm. You know, what's preventing them from responding? Why don't they respond even after we've talked about it? And is it just that person's personality, or is there something else going on that is a tension in the relationship? So you have to kind of differentiate between the two and then decide, okay, if this is how they're going to be, if this is how they're going to be, do I still want this relationship? If the onus is going to be on me to organize, to initiate, to invite, to be in touch, is this worth a relationship?
Exactly.
Right? And it might be. There might be some people where it might be, and for some, not so much.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And I think, you
and
know,
that's okay.
One important thing that I would want everyone listening to understand, regardless of how old, if there are teens on, I think I saw one, Allie was on, and she's a teen, I know her, is when it's time to pull back from a relationship, and it's okay. Like, that's not taboo. It's fine. Have the conversation. And that is something that I don't think I've always done well, but very recently I had to end a friendship because it was toxic. And instead of just, you know, I'm going to block and unfriend, and I didn't do any of that. In fact, I don't even think I unfriended this person, but I had the conversation with them and I said, I wish you no harm. God bless you. And they said the same to me. And I said, I just think that it's time that we stop trying to force a friendship that's not supposed to be. Mm. And for the first time in 50 years, I felt like a grown-up. You know, it sounds so silly, but I actually even shared it without disclosing specifics to my kids. And I said, there are healthy ways to be friends, and there are healthy ways to end relationships where I'm not bad mouthing this person. I'm not, you know, nobody knows who this person is. And that's okay. It's, we've outgrown the relationship, and it just was too toxic for me. And I was becoming emotionally unwell. So I think that's important, that it's okay to end relationships. If you do it the right way, you're better for it.
You just got to preach in the comments because yes, agreed. And you know, that I think that answers one of the questions that I had received. What do you do with relationships that you seem to have outgrown? You know, and I think you can end it in that mature adult way to talk about it in that way. How do you, okay, so Melly asked the question, why is it so hard for us to do that as women when we know that that's the right thing for us? Why is that so hard for us to end a relationship that we've outgrown? And maybe we even need to talk about, what does it mean to outgrow a friendship, a relationship?
Mm-hmm. So I love that Lisa and Melly are connected because they're going to meet each other at Jericho tomorrow. So that's pretty exciting. And hello, Jennifer Coretta. And Dr. Brittany.
And Dr. Brittany.
who was fantastic on your podcast, by the way. That was so amazing. But why is it so hard? I think that's a loaded question. And Melly, my answer would be a couple of reasons. One, because women hold guilt and shame almost like a badge of honor. And I don't want to end this relationship because I'm going to feel guilty. And what are they going to think of me? And I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And all of those thoughts. And we hold that so close, like, well, I'm just going to stick it out, almost like martyrdom a little bit. So I think that's one reason why it's so hard. I think fear. I think plain and simple, it's scary to break up with a friend. I don't know how else to say it. And how do I say it? How do I do it in a mature way? For me, doing it in a way that honors God is very important because of my faith. And so I don't want to be rude, mean, arrogant, gossipy, any of that. But if it's toxic, I also know that honoring God means being healthy. And so the why, I think for me in my life has been out of fear. I don't know how to do it well, so I'm just not going to do it. Yeah. And again, it took me 50 years to get to the point where it was, I am going to do this well. I might trip over my words a little. I can't choose how she's going to respond, but I can choose my words wisely and kindly and with compassion. And that's what I did.
And I think there is a difference when you know it's a toxic relationship. I almost think you don't have an option at that point because this is now about your mental health and the mental health of everybody around you if you're involved in a toxic relationship. And then there's those friendships where we've just outgrown, you know, and we no longer have the same things in common. We no longer see eye to eye, and that actually is getting in the way. And I think oftentimes we don't want to hurt the person. We don't want to offend them. So I think you saying, we have the conversation with compassion. But what I find that people tend to do is just passively, aggressively, okay, we're just going to put distance here. And that may be the way that it works. You put distance there. You kind of don't talk about it. But if there comes to a point where you have to talk about it, you have to talk about it.
Exactly.
And then you talk about it with compassion and kindness. And, you know, acknowledging that this is not no longer a healthy situation.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, it was very comforting when I was able to say, I wish you no harm. I will hold dear the times that we shared that were so full of joy and love and laughter, but that was a really long time ago. And now it seems like our interactions are just hurtful. And I don't want to hurt you, nor do I want to be hurt. So why don't we just agree that this friendship has run its course? And
beautiful. That's a beautiful way to say it.
Right. I was shaking the entire time.
Of course.
I had sweaty palms, like the whole, but again, I felt like an adult for the first time in a really long time that I was able to really say that with maturity and with compassion.
That's a beautiful, those words are beautiful and they are filled with compassion. And I think as women, we have to trust ourselves and give ourselves permission to be healthy, mm-hmm. you know, because that's what it is, healthy in our relationships. I know we got a question from Mary that talked about how do you deal with sibling relationships that have changed, which is a question that I'd love to give you. And also I also got the question about relationships with women who are relatives, sisters, sister-in-laws. Sometimes those are the most complex relationships there are, the within family female relationships. So I have my thoughts on it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to turn it right back on you, sister friend. So I'll take it from the teen tween perspective first, right? So my kiddos are 15. My son will be 14 on Saturday. What? And 12. And two girls and a boy. And what's interesting, they're so close in age, which is not my experience. I'm the youngest of eight, and there are 25 years between me and the oldest. So I didn't grow up with siblings that close in age. These last 9 months, especially of them being home and stuck together, is what they've said. I've seen lots of love, and I've seen lots of beyond sibling quabbling, the, you know, get out of my room, you didn't knock kind of things. I've seen some really deep and profound love for one another that I've not seen. I mean, I guess I always knew they loved each other, but I've not seen it like this. So where they've identified each other, two of them, my younger two, as best friends, and we're going to be best friends for forever. And then I had a question from one of my children saying, just because they're my siblings, do they have to be my friends? And I stopped and I thought about that, because I think my gut reaction was like, yes, of course, they have to be your friends. But no, they don't. Do they? You know, so we talked about family and we talked about love and respect. And we talked about, well, what does it mean to be a friend? And so they're kind of hovering in that space right now of, are we really friends? Are we siblings? And that's an interesting question. I think every day it seems to change. And I think once they start to get out more and see people other than themselves, they will realize that they probably are friends. But that was an interesting question that one of my kids asked.
I think, and I so hope my kids are friends one day, but I know it's complicated, you know, and it's complicated for a lot of different reasons. And I'm going to just share a little bit of our own life and situation, and also sibling relationships of friends, because I know they go through some of the same things. You often carry the same roles that you did in your household as kids, as adults, mm-hmm. right? So I think as adults, we can't just assume that we're going to be friends with our siblings. That is a friendship we have to work on if we want it. And we have to put time into it for many of us. For some, it's very natural. It's very organic. But I'd say for a lot of families, it's not. Mm-hmm. And there is tension there. I've had to come to terms at different points that there are certain things my sisters will be for me in my life. And I value those things and appreciate those things. And there's certain things they won't be. And that's okay. That is how our relationship has evolved in that way. But I think to come to a place of acceptance, they are who they are, and to figure out a way to be peaceful, I think it can be a challenge, but worth taking the time to think through. So I think the in-house relationships, so to speak, are tough. And sometimes recognize that although your siblings think they know you, they really might not know you.
Exactly.
You know, they may not know you. And it always goes back to that verse in the Bible. It talks the prophet is without honor in its Ooh. Own hometown, right? Yeah. So they may know you, but they may not know you. So I think, yeah, to be able to work on that relationship, it requires time and effort, just like any other.
A willingness and a desire on both sides, right? So because mm-hmm. of the age difference in my family of origin, I grew up almost like the daughter to seven other siblings, right?
Yes.
Right. But now that I'm an adult, even though they will still refer to me as their baby sister, which I think is fun, we've chosen to become friends. And we've done the work, because when you have a 15 or 20 year age difference, we're at different life stages. My sister's a grandparent already, and I'm still got full age kids. But we've chosen, what do we have in common other than a bloodline? And what can we do? So the one thread in my family is coffee. We have a slight caffeine addiction. So that is our safe and sacred space. We will meet for coffee. We'll talk. I often want to hear stories about what were my parents like when you were little, because they were tired and older when I came along. And so, but we've made the choice. Some people don't make that choice, and that's okay.
Melly just said, I realized how by being the oldest one, I often invalidated their thoughts, feelings, choices. I do much better now. And I've certainly been in that same position, and I feel like I'm still working on it. You know, there's some things that just happen naturally, but no, I think there's a lot of wisdom there, and you're choosing kind of what you're focusing on in the relationships that are the things you share. And sometimes I think there are certain things that we've learned we don't talk about because they only bring conflict and it's not worth it in the relationship. And I think that's the case with certain friendships too, but certainly in families, because you don't have the same choice all the time as you do in friendships.
Right.
Do you have a question? I have a couple more, but I'd love to get one from you.
I have one, and this one says, how do you fight fair in a friendship? And this was from a 16-year-old client.
Oh, how do you fight fair? I mean, I think when you have to know what you're fighting for first,
yeah.
Right? Are you fighting for the friendship? Or are you fighting to make yourself known and understood? Are you fighting for your own perspective? Or are you going to do what's in the best interest of the relationship? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, with any kind of fight, or let's just say communication, right? Because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to communicate. We really want to do a lot of listening first. And if you have that on both sides, I think you have a win-win, but you don't always have it on both sides. So I think really to understand where that person's coming from, listen before we try and construct an argument to convince them of something. Listen to where they're coming from. And make sure you get a clear picture and understanding of what they're saying and what's making them say what they're saying, you know, where it's coming from.
Yeah.
I say that's a piece of it. That's a piece of it. Anything to add on that?
Well, because this came from a teenager, but I think this applies to all of us. I agree, Melly. I agree.
She said most people are fighting more to be right than they are to reconcile, absolutely.
And we listen to respond, not to hear. And I think that's problem number one. But my advice is often, this could be a personal decision, and maybe others have had success where I have not. But I think arguing, communicating, conflict management is most definitely better when done in person. And we should not be sharing our disagreements on social media. And, or, you know, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, any of it, or in a group context, because then you're always trying to get people in and take sides. And again, this is in the context of a teenager who asked me that question. Let's role play the conversation, but let's have the conversation. Let's not type it out, snap pictures, any of that. That is typically not effective.
I've so appreciated. I got one message from a friend who said, hey, let's take this conversation off social media. I really want to have the conversation with you. I want to know how you think. And I want you to hear what I where I'm coming from too. And I just really appreciate that, because there's only so much you can do on social media, and it's meant to elicit the emotional reaction, like you said, gather support from other people for your perspective. We're not hearing each other. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think as soon as we start approaching conversations with as much the goal to hear and understand as to communicate our own perspective and be right, we're actually going to break through some of those walls that often can break the relationship, you know? Right. So
exactly.
Yeah, for sure. One question that someone had sent me was, what do you do about friends who are not happy about your success and your achievement when things are going right for you in your life?
Oh, Lord. Keep it in the thought bubble. That's where it's first and foremost. And I laugh and I hesitate, because I think you and I have both experienced that. And I can't be responsible for how other people feel, right? If they bring it to me, if they are able to make their feelings known, what not to do is don't apologize for your success. Don't apologize for whatever it is they're feeling some sort of way about, but try to listen so that you can understand their feelings and show empathy. I think maybe we've all been there where we've envied the person who got the promotion or what have you. And I think if we can approach it with empathy, that's great. But what we shouldn't do is take responsibility for their feelings and apologize for it. I always examine my heart. Have I done anything? Have I said anything that was condescending or rude or what have you? And if I honestly don't believe that I have said to people, I notice you're pulling back a little, what's going on? And it was more recently than not when, well, you're all into your therapy practice and doing all this now, and it's almost like you don't have time for me anymore.
Right. What are they really saying?
Exactly. So what you're really saying is you miss me. And that actually fills my heart, because I miss you too. And so then I do have to do some of the work on how do I create more space for the people that I love and not just be so busy with my work. So really listen and understand what they're saying. But as a former people pleaser, don't apologize. Don't apologize for being who you were created to be. That's not on you.
And again, when we talk about our circles that we're vulnerable in, the people who are in our wider circle, but the people who are in our tight circle, mm-hmm. you know, we want to make sure that we have people who are happy when good things happen for us. Right. You know, there's only so often that, I mean, once in a while, maybe someone comes at you with resistance because of your achievements. But if that's a constant, you may need to evaluate, is this really a friend if they're not rejoicing when things are going well for me? Because are you the person that can rejoice when something goes well for somebody else? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're not, we have to look at, one, why can that person not be happy for me? What's going on in their life? Or if that's me, why can I not be happy for that person? That's the issue we have to deal with, mm-hmm. right? And then decide at that point, is this a friend you want to keep close, or is this a friend, you know, a friendly acquaintance? And those are the choices we have to make as we get older and, you know, we step into the purposes that we have for our life. And Mary says empathy, and to have empathy for that person, because if they can't be happy for you, 100%, there's something going on in them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely. I had one other question. How do you make new friends in your late 30s, 40s, 50s? How do you make new friends at this stage of your life?
Do you want new friends at this stage? No, I'm sorry.
Sometimes, yes, people yeah. need new friends because they're realizing their friends aren't who they thought they were.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And so I was half joking, but...
I know you were.
I think it's, you know, what is it that you are looking for in a friend? Is it someone who shares common interests with you? Is it someone who, you know, back to the beginning of this conversation, what's the deal breaker? Is there a deal breaker? And so evaluate that. And then, you know, for those of us who still have school age children and pre-COVID at least are carting them around to different sports and activities, are their parents in the genre of people that we would want to be friends with? church, social activities. I know I have a friend recently who recently moved. I don't think she's on here, Riza, who right before she moved to Florida took up tennis. And now she's in Florida, had not played tennis, I don't believe, in her whole life, and now is taking tennis lessons and has made like so many new friends really quickly in her new town, in her new state, through this activity. And so we were just talking on Sunday, and she said, I can't believe how many friends that I'm making, and seemingly quality friends, over playing tennis, you know? So it could be a variety of ways, but putting yourself out there, and what does that require? That requires a certain amount of vulnerability and being real and being open, and also being choosy. You know, at this stage of my life, I don't want 5,000 friends. I want 5 really good friends or 50 really good friends. And so really evaluating who are they, and how do I feel when I'm with them? And can I be my real self, or do I have to put on the fake facade before I call her on the phone? That's not my friend. So
I love that. Can I be my real self around this person? And like you said, finding those common interests to connect with. And also thinking about initiating, right? So a lot of people, okay, I tried to get in touch with them, but then they didn't call me back. Well, at the beginning, if you want new friends, you might be the one putting in the effort, that's making true. The arrangements, planning the coffee dates or whatever it might be, or the tennis dates. Put the work into it, invest into it, even if it's most of the efforts coming from you at this point, because oftentimes people want different friends at different seasons of their life. This might be your season to go out and make new connections. So some of the work is going to be on you. But I think at a certain point, it becomes more organic and it will be reciprocated. But don't expect that right at the outset when you're the one looking to make the new relationship.
Mm-hmm. And it takes time, right? It's a process.
It takes time. It takes time. For sure. It does take time. Carrie, this is great. And I think too, like, let's just take 2 minutes and talk about why we think our friendship is healthy, is solid.
Sure.
So we have not been friends for years.
Correct.
We have not. This has been something that has come into our life over the last couple years. So you can make very good friends at every stage of your life. Don't discount that. And the more you know yourself, I think the easier it is to connect with someone else who also is in that place. And then it feels like you're friends forever. It doesn't feel like, okay, this is a brand new thing.
Absolutely. It feels like you and I have known each other for forever. I almost sometimes feel like we grew up together, and I know that we don't.
I know.
Of who we are as women, and we are moms. Mm-hmm. Our husbands are both named Ed, you know, but our faith is very important to us.
Yes.
Being brown and black women is very important to us in terms of identity, and we're both therapists. So when those circles overlap at the core is you're the real deal, and we laugh a lot. And I think
we do.
I am very vulnerable with you and you with me. And I think that safe and sacred space, you are right there, my friend. You are right there.
Oh, and you know that you're in my circle. And I think the fact that we believe for each other, we believe in the purposes that God has in our life, and we support each other in that is such a blessing. And, you know, I think we genuinely know we want the best for each other. We want to help each other get there in whatever way we can as friends. So, no, it's a blessing. And I will just add this for people of faith. Pray for good friends. Yeah. Pray for good friends, because it's something that God wants for us that I believe he'll bring into our life. And be the friend that you want. Be the friend that you want to find. So thank you. Thank you for doing this. We'll do it again.
Well, my friends, that was a lot, but hopefully you found some truth in that for you, something to focus on as you go through this season. Just know, we don't need a lot of friends. We don't. We need few, even one good friend who we know that we can turn to, who we know wants the best for us. And it is possible. And if you haven't made that friend yet, be that friend to someone else. And I believe it will be returned to you. I hope you have a great week. Be well, live full, and I'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a second, go on the Apple Podcast app and rate this podcast. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like and what you want more of. And connect with me. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media at Nero Feliciano, the Incidental Therapist on Facebook, and Nero Feliciano on Instagram. And you can also connect with me through my website, Nero Feliciano. So until the next time, have a great day, be well, and live full.